Welcome to the Midday with Stephanie.
And Norman.
And guests. Count them. One, two, three.
The Roca Trio. They've been proclaimed the most sought-after trio in the world. And the Washington Post wrote that they play nothing halfway, hair flying, bodies heaving, bows shedding, hairs left and right. The Roca Trio achieve gestures of orchestral power and sweep. Well, we can't guarantee that you'll see bows shedding hairs, but maybe some hair flying during the interview.
We'll give you play-by-play on that.
I don't know about the bodies heaving part.
During the interview. Though I did break two bows on stage with the trio.
You actually broke the bows. What were you playing?
One time we were playing Bach Chaconne, and I hit a really big four-note chord. Mm. And not when I hit it broke as I then sustained and just like powered it out.
It's a huge sound.
And it was like, it just shattered. It exploded.
That was awful.
It was shocking because it was a very, very nice book.
That's for future reference, Sarah San Ambrosio.
I'm jealous.
Yes. Well, let's.
And then once in Korea. Actually, we were trying to read through a Korean folk melody to play at a concert that we were doing in Seoul. And then it just, I don't know what happened, but boy, that was that. It just went boom. But I got it fixed, and I still play on it. I'm playing on it.
So
you might, if you come to one of the concerts, you might actually get to see it break again.
See it break. Oh, that's something to show up for. Yeah.
That's cellist Sarah Sant'Ambrogio. She's been here before, about 4 years ago with the trio.
Yeah, and so was Erica. Is it first syllable or second syllable?
Nick Renz.
She's the pianist, and they have a new, well, relatively new violinist, and that's Susie Park, who's been with them about 3 years. Three and a half or so. They're all top-ranked, award-winning soloists in their own right, and together they've recorded eight CDs now, Grammy-nominated. So we're really thrilled to have you here on the Midday. So official welcome to the Roca Trio.
Have we said yet what they're doing here?
They'll be performing tonight at the Wisconsin Union Theater in Madison, and then again tomorrow night with the Saturday night with the UW Chamber Orchestra.
They're fast. They know where they are and what they're doing. That's good. Well, you know, some years ago now, Erica, one of your teachers was here. Very charming man, too.
Abby Simon.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. He's incredible. He was my idol growing up. I started playing for him when I was 9 years old because my mother actually was a Grammy Award-winning record producer, and she used to make all of his recordings.
I just fell in love
with his sound, with his tone. I used to fall asleep with headphones on and just melt at his Chopin Concerti. And then it was my dream to play for him. So I started playing for him when I was 9, and then it was my dream to study with him. And finally, I did get to at Juilliard, and it was just an amazing journey with him. And he's still around and playing.
Well, he came back at a late age, which is to say in his 70s, from a terrible accident, too. You know, that
when he broke
traffic,
his pinky.
That was a long time ago. Yeah, it was a freak thing where he put his hand in his coat pocket. I think he was in Geneva or something.
Yeah, in Vienna.
He also got hit by a car, which was quite a problem, too. But he came back from that with a considerable amount of gusto.
Nothing stops Abby. He's just unbelievable. I think he's going to live past all of us, I swear.
People always forget, also, that as classical artists, like, we're so used to seeing, like, athletes and other people in other professions, that they reach their peak in their 30s, and then it's just like hanging on. Whereas, you know, classical artists, like Yasha Heifetz, one of his greatest achievements was his Brahms recording, which people still, to this day, hold up as the greatest recording ever of the Brahms concerto. He was 55 when he was coming up to his peak. And when he recorded that album. So, you know, that's the thing. When Abby broke his finger, he was nowhere near the end of his career. So, of course, he was going to come back. He was just hitting his stride, you know.
Now, which one of you was it who had the incident with Rudolf Serkin? You were playing basketball.
Me.
That's Chilla Sarah.
Yes. I was always the naughty one. Yeah. I was at Marlborough Festival. I used to always go out and after the meals, I was playing so much music that basically I would be rehearsing from the second breakfast was over to like a little bit into lunch, and then the second lunch was over to dinner. And so one of the things that I would do to sort of let off steam was I would play with the kitchen help and like the lifeguards. I would play basketball outside of the cafeteria. And since I'm not 6 feet tall, I'm, you know, the medium height one of the trio. I'm about 5'6" on a very good straight day. I had to make up for what I lacked in height with aggression. And so I would just barrel down the court at everybody, and they would be like, "Oh my gosh, you're Kosera, get out of the way." And Serkan really lectured me about doing that because he was like, you know, you can't one hit in the wrong way and that's it. And I was like, oh, no, I'm fine. I've been playing basketball since I was six, you know. And sure enough, immediately right after that, I went out and jammed my finger really badly and I had to play a concert that night with Serkan. And so I had to just eat it.
Did he know?
No, he did not know. And nobody
you didn't
knew,
mention
but
it.
I knew because it was killing me.
It's so true. I'm almost 5'11 and I was getting recruited all the time to be on basketball teams and stuff. I mean, not teams, but at my school, you know. And I just said, no, I'm a nerd, you know. Yeah. I played soccer because you didn't use your hands,
yeah.
You know.
Safer.
But,
yeah. Well, shall we hear some use of hands and a little bit of Beethoven from our trio in its earlier incarnation?
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a great... This will be on the program tonight, right?
Not this Beethoven, but this composer. Yeah,
which one is Ludwig von Beethoven.
Yeah, sir, you're playing the C minor tonight,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, we're playing the C minor. Mm-hmm.
Which is really a lovely, almost his first dramatic use of C minor, an opportunity for you to have some hair waving. And
yeah. Well, it's a surprising piece because it actually is rather early in its opus number, its work, and in his trajectory as a composer, but it reads and it sounds so much more mature than an early work. It sounds really like he's reached his middle period. It's kind of surprising always. I'm always shocked by how early it is in his compositional publishing career that piece was written because it doesn't feel really like middle period.
It does. Oh, it's definitely got all the drama and the subito dynamics and all of that sort of volatility and
Sturm und Drang.
It's very very quintessential.
It's such a balanced work also. I feel like, you know, the movements, the length of the movements, and there's a variation movement, and then there's a minuet, and it's just so well-crafted. I mean, it's really...
He's got a good reputation.
Yeah. Yeah. That guy, he kind of knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, that's the C minor that they're talking about. We'll hear the finale from the B-flat piano trio. This is the Tema con Variazioni and the Eroica Trio.
Too much storm and stress in that one. That was a trio in B-flat.
And Beethoven. Not storm and stress, but theme and variations in that last movement to the piano trio in B-flat by Beethoven. The performers, the Eroica Trio, all three are our guests here on the midday this afternoon. They're here in Wisconsin to appear at the Wisconsin Union Theater tonight, and then again on Saturday with the UW-Madison Chamber Orchestra.
I have a question about your American Journey. Is this your latest CD?
It is.
It's also on the EMI label. Now, why do they do this? They have pictures of the three of very nice pictures, but they have the wrong names over the pictures. Why do they do that?
You know, the reason why they do that is because a piano trio originally, you know, sort of historically, you put the pianist name first because it's a piano trio, then the violin, then the cello. So, but it always annoys me, too. So they put the names in a banner at the top of the picture, but it just happens to be that I was underneath the piano name, and then you were underneath Susie's name, and then Susie was underneath my name just because that's the order. I know, people get very confused.
This CD was nominated for a Grammy Award, and you've got loads of acclaim, and you've been called the vanguard of the new generation. I'm wondering how the new generation is reaching you and how you're reaching them. Are you doing a lot of outreach via Facebook and Twitter and all that sort of stuff?
We're just starting to get into that, actually. It's a fantastic democratizing tool because the traditional gatekeepers of fine, quote-unquote, art don't matter with social networking. And so you can bring it right to the people and they can weigh in with their opinion is every bit as important as anyone else's. And so I think it's a fantastic medium that that pop music got into immediately, and movies as well. But I think classical music needs to and is getting much more involved in. I think it's an amazing tool. I mean, I have people, fans who have my CDs who live in Bulgaria, South Africa. I have a huge fan base in Brazil who I've never met.
I wonder why that is.
They just, because one cellist in a Brazilian orchestra stumbled across my Facebook page, downloaded some clips for my CD, and fell in love with it and just started telling everybody about it. And they all became my friends. I have like 175 fans in this one town in Brazil. You know, it's a great tool. Yeah. Susan's very good at this stuff. She's really our social networking expert.
I don't know about that.
Expert.
We do have a profile up on Facebook, not yet on Twitter, but it's really cool to just see what our fans or our audiences can, how they can upload band pictures. And, you know, it's just a really personal way to get in touch with people, I think.
Do they give you concert impressions, like little mini reviews?
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they also tell you what they want, actually, which is really interesting.
What do they want?
Well, because... Well, on my page, I have some music videos that I've made, and they've said exactly what they liked about them and what they didn't like about them and what they want to see next, you know? And that's great, because you can get great feedback that way from someone who just knows what they like and what they don't like, rather than someone who might be trying to make a point intellectually about something.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, do you actually see a pattern in all of these wants and not wants?
I think people really want to get to know you. They want to really want to interact with you. And that's one of the reasons, I think, why they say that we are on the vanguard of a new generation, because we grew up with that exact same thing. And we want to get to know them. We don't want barriers between us and the audience. We want to really interact with the audience. And as performers, the audience really affects our performance, really does. And so it's a natural evolution then to continue on to Facebook and all the social networking sites and have that interaction with them.
Direct connection. Right.
It's very exciting. And I think it's extremely American.
So how do you interact with an audience during a concert, or you draw the line there? I mean,
no, we do really much interact.
Talk to the audience.
Well, obviously, many times.
Do you?
Uh-huh. But more so.
Because like a piano quartet almost, because if you know, if we feel their responses, just the way they're breathing, or you know, when we come out and they're just enthusiastic and already, you know, welcoming
pumped.
Us, then, you know, I mean, otherwise you can just play in your living room, right? I mean,
sure.
Yeah, or they can listen to a CD. The fact that they, you know, drag themselves out of their houses, whatever they're doing after work, and, you know, and maybe they're a little tired, but they you know, come to hear us live, and then there's this energy that goes back and forth and back and forth. And
yeah.
So the audience is the fourth player.
They really are the fourth player. And you feel very quickly, you have this as a performer, as a live performer, which is what classical artists really are more than any other sort of artists. We really, really need that live audience. And even as much as we record, which is a lot for most classical artists never record, you know, we are live performers, and you have like this membrane that you sort of peel back right before you walk out, and you start feeling the audience. Every audience is different. You start feeling how they're going for a certain, like they're going in down a certain road, and so then the performance starts going down that certain road because you feel that that's where the connection's happening. You know, so it's a really beautiful thing.
And also, we oftentimes attract first time concert goers, which we, of course, it's everybody's mission.
Yes,
and you know, a lot of times they'll clap after all of the movements, and you'll see some audience member going, don't do that. And, you know, we smile, we welcome it, you know, it's great. I mean, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, it was the norm to
That's
clap
right.
even
they would
during.
They would actually play completely different works in between movements
right.
of
yeah.
a Beethoven symphony.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's getting a little stuffy out there sometimes. So, you know, if you want to clap, if you want to
exactly.
yell, if you want to, you know, if you want to flick your lighter, that's fine.
The more we hear your reaction, the better.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you know, because that's the only way that we know whether what we're doing is working, you know, and whether it's, you know, and as we said, we're live performers. So it's great to hear people's reaction, and we love it.
Any cell phone incidents in concert?
Oh, yeah. Horrible ones. That we do not welcome.
No, and once almost a fight broke out in Italy. Because in Italy, they're really bad about cell phones. They make a huge announcement in like 27 languages to turn their cell phone off. And then we were in Spoleto, and someone's cell phone went off, and all of a sudden you heard the whole audience was like, And we're like, oh my gosh, they're giving the evil eye. And then we thought there was going to be a brawl while we were playing. We're like, oh, run, run, Mr. Cellphone, run.
Something happened to that guy.
We don't know. I don't think
it's pretty
lived.
It's pretty hard to hide in the middle of an audience when your phone goes off.
So yeah. Bad.
Yeah, so we urge people to pay attention to that rule no matter what. Let's see if we can get in a little more music from the Eroica Trio before the quiz question, then we'll have some more, too.
This is from the brand new CD we were just talking about. An American Journey is the name of the CD. And what are we going to hear, Norman?
Somewhere. How about Somewhere?
From Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story.
Somewhere.
By Leonard Bernstein from West Side Story, Suite 4, Piano Trio. Our guests, the Eroica Trio. We were melting, enjoying this piece, and they were grimacing and making faces.
Nobody ever likes to hear their own recordings.
Susie, the violin there was just lovely. What instrument do you play?
I am very lucky to play on a J.B. Guadagnini, dating from 1740, made in Piacenza, Italy.
Wow. Sarah, what are you playing?
On that recording I'm playing, and right now I'm playing on a Matteo Goffriller, 1712, from Venice, that's being loaned to me by Samsung Foundation of Culture. And I'm very, very fortunate to have it.
Wow. Boy.
Yeah.
And Erica, you have to...
2008 Steinway.
Very
good. Very proud to be a Steinway artist, and they're the king of pianos. So looking forward to meeting a new one tonight.
You always have to adapt to whatever you find where at the venue, don't you?
Definitely pros and cons of being a pianist. You don't have to carry anything, which is phenomenal.
But then you get what you get.
But then you have to kind of make friends really quickly with some dubious instruments sometimes, but I'm sure it'll be great here in Wisconsin.
There's some great stories about that, too. You are actually playing tonight.
Yes.
So
one of our favorites.
And you released this. This must be one of your earlier recordings.
Mm-hmm. It goes back to second one.
About 1997 or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some dazzling Dvorak.
This is the Dumke.
It is the Dumke. Dumke, okay, I always have to remember, the Dumke is a like a narrative of some kind, and this is a series of these little dumki, is the plural.
It's a really unique form. I mean, it's either five movements or six movements the way you look at it, but each movement has a whole bunch of sections to it, and it's little stories just strung together, and some are very joyful, and some are full of angst, but none of them last very long. And they're all strung together, and it almost feels like one big work.
Yeah.
And this first movement has almost sort of like a fuse to it. It starts out almost suspiciously sort of quiet and slow, and then you guys just really kick in. Here it is, first movement of the Dumke Trio by Dvorak from the Eroica Trio. That's just the beginning. I mean, you guys are going to be playing, you ladies will be playing the entire Dumke Trio tonight.
Yeah, it's such a fun piece to play because you get to use so many parts of your personality. And, you know, really, you feel like by the time you leave, you just exercise every single emotion that you've ever felt in your entire lifetime and every experience that you've ever had you've drawn upon. And it's just an amazing, amazing journey.
Don't forget the flying hair.
Yeah,
the hair plot. You've got to be part of it, too. Maybe the broken bow, too.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I hope not.
That's on the concert program tonight at the Wisconsin Union Theater. The Eroica Trio will be performing that Dvorak Piano Trio, as well as the Piano Trio in C minor by Beethoven and Joan Towers Trio for Daniel. And then on Saturday, you're performing with the UW-Madison Chamber Orchestra, and that also has music of Beethoven. That's the Triple Concerto for piano, violin, cello, and orchestra. And then the orchestra is doing Charles Ives and Scarlatti Tomasini, the Good Humored Ladies. All of that, there's a special going on. If you're in the Madison area and you buy a ticket for the concert tonight, you can have a free ticket for the concert on Saturday night.
That's a great deal.
It really is a great deal. And the website is uniontheater.wisc.edu, or the phone number is 608-265-ARTS. And for information about the Eroica Trio, they are eroicatrio.com. You three are, this is Women's History Month, and you're featuring a female composer at your performance tonight. You're at the top of your game. You're one of the top chamber ensembles in the world. Do you get a lot of attention for being all female? Is that a big deal now, or is that just kind of a norm and nothing to talk about?
It was a humongous deal when we first started out, because there actually wasn't a single group that was all female, let alone even had a female. I mean, at the time when we started out, it was the Beaux-Arts Trio, which was three men, the Guarneri Quartet, four men, Emerson, four men, Tokyo, four men, every single chamber music group ever had been all men. And so for us to come out with not one woman, not two women, but three was a huge big deal. And it was very, very hard in the beginning, because we got so many blatant sexist comments directed directly to us, as if we wouldn't be offended. Like, people would say, well, you know, you need to get new pictures because, and we thought that they were saying because they were so ugly, because we'd had a friend do it for free, you know, because we were so poor and we were kids. And they were like, yeah, you're way too pretty to be able to play well. And I'm like, you think that that would actually make me feel good? I am so offended by this that I'm speechless, which is very unusual for me, obviously. But now, the funniest thing is now, we've broken down that, we've shattered that glass ceiling. And now, most of the chamber music groups coming up are all female, or have females and males mixed together, and nobody talks about it anymore. It's just amazing to me. But I know the two questions that always I found the most offensive was one that they asked me constantly was, what was I going to do about motherhood? And I said, with the day you can tell me how many children Yo-Yo Ma has is the day that I'll answer that question. And they're like, oh, he has kids? And I'm like, three. Okay, yeah, all right. And then the other one was, how old you are. And I said, if you're a reporter, if you don't do your homework and get online, it's not that hard to find out. But since you've never asked Yo-Yo that, you've never asked the Guarneri Quartet that, you've never asked any other male artist that question, I'm not going to answer it. You know. But now they're everywhere. And so it's almost a moot question. I was very happy to see a friend of mine won Best Director Oscar a couple of days ago. Catherine Bigelow. And I was just so thrilled when she won, because A, I thought that film was extraordinary and the greatest, I mean, the best film in that whole field.
And a very, very low budget, too.
And very low budget, and was really outside of the mark. I also know it's very interesting that for her to get her first film backed by the studio, her husband at the time, James Cameron, actually had to go to the studio and get them to do it. They wouldn't do it for her because they said a woman doing a direct action film is not possible, so we're not going to back you.
Unbelievable.
So she had to start out. She had to have her then husband back her for everything. He backed her for her first film with Jamie Lee Curtis, and he backed her. He wrote her next film for her to direct, and he produced it. And then finally, when she had now two films that had made tons of money and also had been done under budget, was she then able to start slowly getting her own film. So I think it's great because now women, she said, her first quote for AP was, you know, just never give up on your dreams. Mm-hmm. You know, so now girls can look at that, another field they can look at and say, hey, if she can do it, maybe I can do it. And, you know, 20 years from now, every director will be females now. You know, and we'll be like, I don't know, what's the big deal?
There are going to be a lot of female-directed action films. Yeah. I can see it coming now. Well, let's have one more from your American Journey CD before we get to the truth behind today's 12:30 quiz question. And no irony intended here, but this is I Feel Pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I feel pretty.
Do you, Norman?
Well, when I'm with such a glamorous trio, I
do. Oh, yes.
And, of course, my esteemed co-host.
That was the Eroica Trio from their brand new CD, An American Journey, music of Bernstein.
Well, time to get to the results of our quiz question, and we'll involve our friends, the Eroica Trio, in the denouement today.
The question was, what distinction do these share? A mythical gatekeeper, two Roman political alliances, a traditional mode of Russian transportation, a prominent performer of classical music. Well, that prominent performer is the Eroica Trio, of course.
And
the other three, Cerberus, the Triumvirates, and a Troika.
So what's the answer?
Three heads.
Are better than one sometimes.
Yes.
Sometimes even better than two. And we've had a pleasure having all three of you with us today.
It's been great to come back.